Hello, everybody. Welcome to Alchemy of Light. This is Jamil Graham, your host, and Alchemy of Light is a celebration and exploration of consciousness, how we think and feel. And today I'm really excited to be welcoming somebody who has done an awful lot to continue her conscious growth in evolving into the person that she knows she is to become. So please welcome with me, Tonya Pinheiro. Hi, Tonya.
Hi, Jamil. How are you?
I'm doing good today. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
That's great. Well, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for joining us. And your story is very rich with the personal process that is true for every person who's ever known that what they were doing could be better, what they were experiencing could be enhanced, and then you've managed to take that road and do something about that. And that is very special. And would you like to share with us, you know, in some brevity, what your, if you were to take a snapshot of, you know, your basic conscious evolution in the last some years, how would you describe that for us to bring us to date and where you're at now?
Well, I would say that I'm consciously evolving now, that I was unconscious for a long time. And I started on this path that I call ascension path just when I was turning 20. And at that time, I had been singing with a group called the Indigos. Little did I know, like, you know, 30 years later, there would be things, something called Indigo Children. But that was the name of our group. And I had left the group just because I felt like I was having an emotional breakdown. And I was lucky enough to be born to a mother who transitioned herself from being my mother to being my guru. And so she kind of got me on my spiritual path. She died in 1977, and I kept going from there. And what I discovered over the time that I was with her and then without her was that basically every single thing that I was experiencing was somehow my own creation, a creation inside my mind, a perception inside my mind. And that was kind of the key thing that has been a running thread throughout my life and has helped me to shift how I experience my life in very huge ways and in very small, minuscule ways. That's the nutshell, I think.
That's really interesting. When you say your spiritual path, what part of you is spiritual? This word spiritual has so many connotations and associations and expectations and all of that. What, in your definition, when you say you turned to develop your spiritual path and that your mother was able to help get you going on that spiritual path, what is the spiritual path for you? What part of that is that that communicates these visions and these thoughts? Do you, can you describe that?
Yeah, the one of the things that I learned very early on was that I am not my physical body, that I consist of non-visible energy that has its source in the source of all there is that exists, that we haven't even got a clue of how vast it is. And I was raised a Catholic, so I understood from that point of view what God was. And I had an experience in one of the conversations I was having with my mother, we were having this chat about one of my dreams, and right in the middle of it, I had this experience of what I would call the descent of the Holy Spirit on me. And it felt like a huge beam of peace, P-E-A-C-E, that kind of started at the top of my head, and it just kind of came down over me like I was going inside of a cylinder that permeated every single thing in me and took away everything that I thought I was and sat there. I was sitting there for like maybe 3 or 4 minutes in this state. And while I was in this state, there was no thought, no feeling, no nothing except for exquisite peace. And then it lifted back up, and it was like it came down, and it came down over my body, and then it lifted back up, and it went back up. And later I came to understand that what I experienced was my I am presence, that spark of God that that is part of who we are as individuals. Once I had that experience, that is what put me on what I call my spiritual path, because I wanted to have that experience over and over and over again. It was like that God spark in me was letting me know that it was worth searching for, finding, and living inside of. And probably had I not had that experience, I would not have been able to go through the deconstruction of who I was to such a great degree. Because at the core of me, I had the memory of that experience. So when I talk about a spiritual path, what I'm talking about is having a conscious communion and relationship with the essence of my God self that is within me. Also part of that experience and part of what I learned and discovered over time is that there's lots of voices, aspects, that makes up this thing that we call human being that lives inside of us in varying degrees. Now, we're familiar with the term ego and personality and like that, but I needed to find a way to distinguish the voice of my ego, the voice of my mind, the voice of my personality, the voice of my spirit, and try to figure out, when I hear something in my head, who's talking to me? And it's this real weird kind of way of living that, and especially in the early days when I was trying to figure it all out, of continuing to question, who's talking now? You know, I mean, it sounds like crazy, and it kind of was, but I needed to know. Who's talking now? Is this my ego? And for some reason, whatever it was, if it wasn't that God spark in me talking, it would reveal itself.
Yes, interesting.
But if I didn't ask, it would kind of masquerade as my God self. And so it was a really interesting time for me. And one of the ways that I was able to hone my recognition of what was my intuitive voice was by doing dream work in a dream study group. Because in that context, one of the rules we had was we bring our dreams, we share our dream. Everybody that's in the group gets to comment on what they think different aspects of the dream are about. but it is the dreamer who gets to decide what's true for them or not. Mm. And because it was, it took all the pressure off of anybody being right.
Hmm.
And so because of that, I was able to really get a handle on what my intuitive voice, how it appeared to me, how it showed up. And it never showed up as like somebody talking inside my head, which is what my mind does and my ego does.
Hmm.
It just, there would be a thought, like a complete thought, and it would just go poof, and it would just like explode in a gentle way inside my head, and I'd have like the whole picture in my head. And then I would get to the person. And more often than not, they would resonate with it. So just learning how to tell the difference between these things, you know, took a long time, but I'm really good at it now, you know, because I'm older now. So,
Bless your heart. That's not an easy task. When you were saying, well, I was figuring that out, I was, wow, you figured that out? that's a lifetime's work, at least one, you know, oh my goodness. But the journey is the point, the journey and the learning, the love and the learning and the resilience of coming to a plateau and realizing, wow, I'm here now, I can do this, and now I can go on. That's what adds meaning to your life.
Yeah, it does. And I think that a lot, when I used the word earlier, deconstruction, and I really, that was really what was going on for me, because as many people have, I experienced a lot of trauma in my childhood. So I had built up all these defense mechanisms, and the defense mechanisms were protective devices, but they also really shut me down a lot. Mm. And so part of the deconstruction process was allowing myself to go back and really look at these things that happened to me. And then if I, you know, try to get understanding about, like, well, why did this happen? Like, why would somebody do that to a little kid? You know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not being able to actually get the answers, I had to make it be different so that I could function in the world. And so,
how did you do that?
Well, it's like this. For example, my father was a very emotionally and physically abusive man when I was growing up. My parents got divorced when I was 10. I was thrilled when they got divorced.
Mm.
But I had to find a way to make peace with what he did to me so that I could get on with my life.
Mm.
Talk about the term forgiveness.
Mm.
That was a word that was kind of like, well, I don't know, you know, I don't know about all that. But realized about the concept of forgiveness is, for as long as I hold on to the fear, the resentment, the hatred, the, you know, how could you do this to me, the victimization, all that stuff, as long as I'm holding on to it, I'm stuck. It's not doing anything to him. It's doing it to me. And I don't want to feel this anymore. I don't want to feel this pain. I don't want to feel this fear. I don't want to feel these things anymore. So what can I do to stop feeling that way? So there were lots of different little tools and things that I, you know, either read about or went to a workshop for or figured out or whatever to allow my version of that reality to serve me instead of victimize me.
Ah.
By that
okay.
Way. So if someone yells at me, I do not need to cower anymore because I'm not a little kid. I can stare them in the eye, and I can try to understand, and what is causing you to scream at me? Because something in you is causing you to scream at me, regardless of what I did. okay? Mm. I was in the camp of being the goody two-shoes girl.
Mm.
So when I got to in my 40s, one of the things that I had decided along the way was, when I die, I want to know that I have made as peace with everybody, if possible, that I have ever crossed paths with, because I do not want to come back here and deal with more karma. Okay? I don't want to do that anymore. I want to be done. Okay? And so if part of being done means I have to figure out a way to make peace with all these people that were on my list of people I don't like, I have to change that. Because I just, I got to come back and do a do-over. I made attempt after attempt to communicate with my father. And finally, the day came when he agreed to allow me to teach him how to play cribbage.
Mm-hmm.
Lived about 5 minutes away from each other.
Mm-hmm.
The times that we were playing cribbage, he began to tell me his life story about what, like for him growing up as one of seven children. And that's when I got all the understanding about why he treated me the way he did. He was just downloading what happened to him onto me.
Mm.
Now, when I got that understanding, it totally, I mean, I had already done all my healing work and forgiveness work, but it really shifted a lot because now I understood this ancestral stuff that was getting passed down and passed down and passed down. I made a conscious decision not to have children because I couldn't guarantee that I would not perpetrate on them what was perpetrated on me. So I said, I'm not having them. And, you know, when people ask me, why don't you have any kids? I would just tell them, oh, I had so many kids in past lives, I didn't need them this time. You know, and I joke it off. But that's the real reason. Because I have been sure in my 20s and 30s that I would not go off on my kids like my father went off on me. So
you broke the chain.
I did. I did. And that's one of the things, like, in my work with people, I think it's really important to understand. Like, people stay in this state of, like, let me heal myself. And there's a point at which it's not you anymore. It's about your ancestral lineage. Excuse me. It's about your soul lineage. And so the healing that we're all doing works on the current lifetime. And then you have to make a kind of a conscious choice to allow it to run back through your bloodlines and your soul lineage to heal the past. And, you know, once we step out of 3D, there is no past, present, and future.
Right.
To heal all of that that you have experienced or that you are a descendant of. And for me, it's been really a really powerful journey to do that as well, because I have so many different bloodlines running through me.
The conversation of past lives completely shifts when the focus changes to now and time collapses. And there's no past, present, or future. So all the lives that we live, we're living exactly at the same time we're living this one.
Right.
So it's I like that understanding because it makes it a lot more accessible, you know, like all these files on the computer, you can plug up this year and that life in this lifetime and see how they all interconnect.
Yeah.
And that does make things change, not only for ourselves and our own personal lineage, but eventually you reach the place where you are connecting with all that is and the cosmos and the entirety of the human family. And you realize you're not just doing this for yourself or your family. You're doing it for the entirety of the evolution of the species.
That's exactly right. Yep. And whenever I do my music or I do a workshop or, but mostly when I'm doing my music and I always have like a little healing component in it. I say that to people and I say, whatever it is that you're healing, we're going to heal it for you and you're doing it on behalf of the planet. I limit it to the planet. Mm-hmm. And so if you're trying to heal, you know, something, health issue, then you're healing it for yourself and for the planet and humanity. And if you're dealing with an emotional issue, then you're healing it for yourself and the planet and humanity. And it ripples out. It's like when I really got a handle on this concept, it made it a lot easier for me to endure pain and move through it a lot quicker. Once I understood, like I would say things like, haven't I dealt with this already? Like, do I have to deal with this yet again? You know, and what came to me was, you're doing it for the planet now.
Mm.
It's like, oh, okay. You know, so now I'm doing it for the planet. Well, and I love being in service. You know, I mean, that's like, well, that's why I'm here. We're all here to be in service. And so once I knew this wasn't about me anymore, it made it both easier to move through different things that I was experiencing, and also it allowed me to do more of it. Because now I had a bigger picture, now you see the bigger picture of why we're doing all these ceremonies or your heart, like you're having heart issues. Okay, and they can't find anything wrong, but you're having heart issues. I mean, those are the ones, you know, those are the ones that are the most interesting when you're having some physical thing going on and the doctor can't find anything wrong, then maybe it's because you're doing something for the planet. And it's not some, or, I mean, people could say, well, maybe it's psychosomatic or, you know, maybe it's an emotional-based thing. Sure.
Mm-hmm. And it's always emotional based.
Yeah. Well, it is always personal based. But, there's also this thing of, you know, little did you know that when you were rowing your boat, that, you know, there were a whole bunch of more people in your boat with you that you just weren't aware of.
Mm.
So that's kind of, and it's like this whole, it's like that oneness concept again.
Mm.
Like, we're inside of our physical bodies, so we're not always conscious of the fact that we are part of this whole fabric that is the experience of living inside of the body of God. That's the only way I can describe it, so my mind has a picture.
Mm.
Even though if that's true. When you see all those pictures of the cosmos, think all those, I mean, you know, the Hubble telescope pictures and all that stuff.
Yeah. They take me away. If I look at those too long, I'm gone. I don't even need to look at the picture and I'm gone. They do something to me big time. I really do have to diet myself.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, it's a lot. And that, the fact that we can do that now, couldn't do it 50 years ago.
Right.
100 years from now, what are we going to be able to see? What I'm saying is, like, we've evolved. Our technology has evolved so much that we're able to see so much more now. Like, if you look at us 100 years ago, like last century, when a lot of us like running around last century, we didn't have a concept of what we could experience, but now we're experiencing it, and it's going to keep on going like that. So for those people who say you know, there's no such thing as ghosts, and there's no such thing as extraterrestrials, and blah, blah, blah. Go look at the Hubble telescope pictures and tell me that with all that that is capturing, that there's nothing else out there. That's a fear response.
Thank you.
Full of reality. Oh my God, what am I going to do? You know? It's like, yep, that's exactly right. You're losing grip on reality.
And isn't that a cool thing? Because why would we want to be where we were at 100 years ago?
Yeah.
You know, why would we not want to move forward from here to, teleportation and, you know, 15-minute trips to Mars, which are already in motion, you know, if you have the capacity in your mind to be open and, you know, look between the lines, these things are actually already happening. And why would we not want it to happen? Why would we not want to get off our petrochemical war addiction and move into a harmonious time when we're all sharing and expanding in our dreams and loving each other openly and enjoying the ride? Why wouldn't we want to change?
Well, you know, I say that it's because of what the role of fear. And one of the revelations that I had that was so remarkable to me was this concept of being successful and being in the public eye. And my mother raised me in a way that was extremely responsible. And really instilled in me the value of being responsible and living a responsible life. If I decided that I was going to do something that broke away from that concept, the revelation was that if I stop having a day job, which is one of those responsible things to do, that means that I'm betraying my mother, and it means that I don't love and respect her anymore because I'm going against her good advice. Now, that little train of thought, when that came up in me, was so revealing because someplace in me, the little girl in me or whatever, really felt that way. We can't let this go. Like, we hold on to things that mean something to us because they belonged to someone else. And we live our lives holding on to beliefs that belong to someone else. And we never take the time to figure out, well, what is it that I believe? And if I believe something that's different than what I was taught, then that means something bad. And so my fear kicks in and says, no, I'll keep going along like I'm going. And that's how we stay stuck, and that's how we end up going so slow. Now, there are some people that fly in the opposite direction, right? And they are the people who, you know, they're the rock climbers and the cliff hangers and the skydivers and like people that live lives like that, and not just doing those activities but in any area of work.
The risk takers, basically.
Yes, the term I'm looking for. The risk takers, like, we all have a role to play. Like, we're all showing each other pictures of things that we are or that we wish we could be or that we're glad we're not. You know, it's basically those three things. And so part of the work that I do now, currently, is bringing people the awareness of how beliefs and assumptions operate so that they can become conscious of how they operate and therefore do something different about it. Assumptions fuel beliefs. And assumptions happen so instantaneously that we don't even know we're making them.
Mm.
But if we could get a hold of an assumption, like if I make a comment, like I make a comment about, you know, it could have been in some other lifetime that I've had, I'm making an assumption that the people that listen to me or listen to this understand about other lifetimes.
Mm.
They're listening to your show, that's probably true, but I've said this in situations where that may not be the case. But I said it anyway because it was important to me to say what was true for me without censuring myself about what are other people going to think if I say this.
Right.
Because how many... I mean, we do this so automatically. We get ready to say something, and we look at who's listening and shift it. Or decide to say it not at all because we don't know how they're going to receive it.
So we shut ourselves down.
Yeah, the risk-taking has to do with just speaking my mind. Oh, I have this song that I sing. I'll sing the first verse. I won't sing the whole song.
Oh, sing the whole song. It's a beautiful song. It will be such a pleasure to hear that song.
You know, we're talking about speaking what's in your heart, speaking what's in your mind. This song is the song I was singing in a group called Goddess Gospel. It was an a cappella group, all women. And the music director wrote this song. Her name is Louise Cloutier. It goes, speak in my mind. Is tasting good on my tongue, cooking fine on my tailbone, a fire in my heart. Speaking my mind is tasting good on my tongue, cooking fine on my tailbone, a fire in my heart. Whoa, speaking my mind, speaking my mind, speaking my mind, speaking my mind, speaking my mind is growing flowers in my hand, putting a laughter in my feet, putting hope in my heart. Whoa, speak in my mind, speak in my mind, speak in my mind, speak in my mind, speak in my mind is building home with my family, building bridges with strangers, singing dreams for this earth. Whoa, speak in my mind. Speak in my mind, speak in my mind, speaking my mind. So,
thank you.
You're welcome. I love that song because of what it says, but it's also kind of like, it's like an encouragement to people. It's like, what happens when you say the truth? You say your truth, it makes all these wonderful things happen. Because because when someone watches you, like I've listened to your show now, and when you talk, you speak from a place of core integrity and truth. And you speak from your the essence of who you are. People get that. You can feel when someone is giving you a lecture. You can feel energetically that they're trying to impress you. And that they're trying to impress you with their knowledge and their insight. Or if they're just being real. Okay. I do improvisational acting. I do improvisational singing because it keeps me on the edge of being in the now all the time. I love it. It's scary as all get out, but I love it because it does that. Because you can't be preparing it and, you know, figuring out, like, what's it going to be next and all of that. So...
Life isn't like that anyway. When we're really honest with ourselves, every moment is a surprise.
Exactly.
We don't know what's going to happen, so we're basically always living in the unknown. So,
yeah.
So what's the bother, you know?
Exactly. So,
well, you share with us a bit about your work, how you've manifested, and you know that. Couple of questions. So much of what you're saying goes right back to your original sharing about becoming aware of, making friends with, in essence, the voices in your head and becoming very solidly aligned with the God spark in you, as you called it, the divine in you that you know you're here for, to serve. And all of these things that you are sharing with us always go back to that, in being real and knowing your mind, what it is you want to share, and activating the part of the play, you know, how you perceive things, again, you know, the voices in your mind, the voices in your head, with your father situation, you know, you had to know which voice were you listening to. And then with your mother situation, I'm really up to date now. Two questions on that. How did you, if there's a simple answer, that what you say, share with us, is a very universal experience, I think, even though we might not have the exact circumstance, but we want to make a change and we've adopted something, a belief that we were handed, we inherited from somebody we love and respect so much, and that feeling of betrayal in honoring our truth and the healing of that belief. I wonder if you could share with us a little bit, give us a little clue of how we might work with that, because I think you hit it right on the head. That is such a key thing that keeps so many people in fear and holds us back. Mm-hmm. And also, from there, how did you move this into the world? You left your day job. So bring us to date on how you broke that chain, spread your wings, mm-hmm. and where you are now.
Mm-hmm. I think I'll do it in reverse order because that's kind of how it happened.
Okay.
I got my first day job as soon as I got out of high school. I worked for the city of Boston in the water department. I left that job. I worked there for about 4 years. I left that job to go sing full-time. And the singing full-time lasted 6 months, during which time everything in my life fell apart. So I came back home and got another day job working for the Department of Public Welfare in the payroll office. And so from that moment, which I think that was probably, I forget what year it was, 1965 or something, it was 1969 is when I got that job. From 1969... for the next, till 1990, I worked for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts in different capacities. And during that time, I had my mother until 1977, and then I kept on going. And so I was really living the life that she had taught me to live. And I was also studying intensely, about everything metaphysical, spiritual, you name it, I read it.
Mm.
All different, you know, belief systems and Buddhist and Hindu and, you know, just everything.
Mm.
I left the Commonwealth of Massachusetts in 1990. At that time, we were going into a recession. I had made a plan. It took me 6 months to figure out emotionally how I was going to do this. But I had just had enough. Like, I hit what they call the glass ceiling. And so I said, I can't. I'm just going to be this little old lady that works for the state for the next 40 years. That's not me.
Mm.
So I withdrew my retirement money and lived on it for 2 years. And it was the best time of my life. Mm. I had freedom. And it took me another 6 months to realize how stressed out I was.
Mm.
And so... but during that time is when I really started going deep into understanding what is my creative cycle and doing dream work and workshops and speaking engagements and going to sleep at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and waking up at 2 in the morning and doing some project and understanding that I worked in a circular fashion and not in a linear fashion and just all these things. Finally,
that's
big. I had to get another day job because money was running out. So I did that and I worked for another till 2003. So the two jobs that I had before 2003, I left one when I had the experience of being disrespected so deeply that even I couldn't take it. And I have a really high tolerance level for people treating me poorly, okay? When this event happened, where I was the director of human resources and the person that had now become my boss, came by my office one day and said, oh, you know, I was wondering, would you like to join me? I'm going to have a meeting with your staff and let them know what their new job assignments are going to be because I'm sending them to different departments. And that broke it for me because I had no clue that this was even going on. So as an afterthought, she invites me. Now, this is tying into this thing about my beliefs about a day job and how if I allow this to take place, because this wasn't just the one incident. I mean, there was like a whole series of things that other kinds of things that led up to it. I left that job without another job to go to, and that was a huge no-no. If you leave a job, you better have another one to go to. Now, this is my world, okay? Other people, they don't have any problem leaving that job. I don't like this job. I'm leaving. I don't care. That's them. But this, for me, it was this huge thing about breaking tradition.
Wow.
Same thing happened again. Like, a year goes by. I get another job. I'm in that job for 5 years. And that one breaks down. All this time, I'm running this parallel life of study and research and workshops all about what it means to ascend, what the ascension path is all about, and what it means to find your true source within and live from that place. And this is all running parallel. I'm reading all kinds of channeled information. I'm finding things that resonate with me. When I left that last day job, because I just couldn't take that one anymore either, and that was my dream job. I mean, for the first couple of years, it was like, you know, nobody could have a better job than this one. I came to the realization that the person that I am being loyal to, who is my mother, I know in my heart of hearts that she would not want me to suffer. Okay, I know this. So why am I holding on to this idea? It's an idea that I have about her. I don't even know. Here. Okay? So it's an idea that I have. And we hold on to the idea because if I let go of this idea, I will be floating in space without any place. I won't know who I am. Okay? Go ahead, let go of that balloon. Just watch it fly off into the sky. It'll find a home somewhere, or it will explode, but you're still going to be standing on the ground. I mean, that's basically it, you know? So, oh, we have all these little balloon ideas of things that really mean something to us. When you think about people that are going through divorces, you know, it's like all these things that are so important. Is it really? Perhaps the children and the pets. Is all that other stuff really that important? Or are you just trying to make a point?
Okay. Ask the real questions.
Well, that is the question. And ultimately, it's all going on inside your head. You're sitting there on the couch or at the table having this huge conversation with yourself about why things need to be the way they are for you, or why they need to be different, or why they, whatever. But it's all going on inside your head.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going on out there. It's in your head.
Mm.
You know, so it's like, and that is over and over and over again, okay?
Mm.
It's in your head. And so I'm thinking to myself, this must be what God is experiencing, only on a much vaster scale. Here's the thing called God, or consciousness, or the undifferentiated source, that's got all this stuff going on inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's aware of it, and maybe not. And, you know, like, we have all these organs inside our body. We're aware, we know they're there, but we don't think about them.
Mm-hmm.
But they're having their own little life going on in there that we, mm-hmm. we don't even think about unless it hurts.
That's right. Right. That's so, right.
You know, so whenever it's important to shift, like doing this talk show with you, I went through this whole thing, this whole emotional thing about doing this show. I talk to people all the time. I'm in front of people all the time. I'm in front of audiences, small and large, all the time. So what was going on in me about talking to you on the phone? It was all going on inside my head. I mean, my emotional body was like, hey, 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 hey. So what I did was I said, okay, this is connected to something clearly not in this current life experience. So, you know, I traced it back and I got this, you know, this idea dropped in about it's connected to other times that you have been embodied when you have spoken your truth out into the world and got, backlash, some kind of negative backlash for having done that.
Mm.
And so that's what your emotional body is responding to.
Mm.
Okay, so I'm feeling it and I'm doing it anyway. You know, feel the pain and do it anyway. I mean, all those little sayings are like very cool. It's just becoming really honed in on the stuff that I'm feeling and experiencing is going on the inside. Outside stuff, I might use that as a mechanism to trigger it. Not consciously, obviously, but that's what's happening. But then the rest of it is all going on in me. What was the rest of your question?
That's brilliant. I think that's absolutely brilliant what you've just shared with us. Because to continue the conversation, the next piece of the question was how you were transforming the belief system, but I think you did answer it.
Okay.
And the place where you've now left us in this incredible taking your power back and taking this opportunity to begin again, it reminded me of when I was studying Tai Chi, and in Tai Chi the teacher always said, whenever you do a pose, make sure you come out of it correctly, because your body will remember when you come out of it incorrectly. So you need to keep doing it until you can come out of it correctly, so your body remembers, has a solid memory of going into the pose correctly and coming out of the pose correctly. So perhaps that's one of the opportunities that we're sharing here, is the opportunity to come out of the pose correctly and say,
yeah,
no, actually my voice matters. What I have to say is real. And you also point to something that I think I would love to hear your comments about in our time. And you said the Indigos were your first band, and the Indigo Children are with us, and the Crystals and the Star Children, and all. We have a new time. We are at a time on planet Earth where it is just the old ways, the old power structures that have supported and, you know, intentionally on a lot of levels suppressed, oppressed, repressed the human voice, the spirit, the soul of humanity. Those power structures are dissolving.
Yeah.
And so many of us are getting the opportunity to stand up and say our piece. And it is nothing short of what you have just shared with us. We have to somehow be able to recognize that we're healing from millennium of repression and oppression and being killed and tortured. And we're still doing it. We're
right.
still doing it. We still have, you know,
yeah.
a great opportunity to stop doing it. You
yeah.
know, right now there's a young soldier whose name escapes me who's been given the death penalty because he gave WikiLeaks the information that Julian Assange gave to all of us, and now the soldier's getting the death penalty, and Julian is getting nominated for a Nobel Prize. I mean, we still have some work to do.
Yeah, oh, yeah, totally.
The power structures are coming down.
Yeah.
And we have a new opportunity
yeah.
to do this. And so would you tell us about your experience of the time we're in? Then tell us a bit about how people can reach you, because we're coming up to the last of the hour.
Okay.
So, just realized the time. So
tell people how they can reach me right now in case
okay.
we run out of time. And that is, I have a website called wakeupworks.org. And it's wake up, WAKEUP, and works, WORKS. So it's wakeupworks.org. And anything you want to know about me is on there. The phrase came to my mind as you were describing what's going on in the world was protecting the perpetrator. This is a concept that was so, it broke me wide open and allowed me to leave my last day job. We stay in patterns because we've been threatened with death and destruction if we oppose the perpetrator of abuse, no matter what form that abuse takes. And once we allow ourselves to see the perpetrator as what they are, as an outside force that is causing us to behave in a particular way, when that force is no longer operating in our life, we continue to do it to ourselves on the inside. Because if I do it to me first, then they can't do it to me ever again.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing this, that I am protecting the perpetrator of my abuse, if you can find out what that is, who that is, what that concept is about, you can unhook it and bless it and let it go.
Mm.
It's very tricky to do because it's a protective device that we have, but it's what, you know, when they talk about internalized oppression, that's what I'm talking about. It's that thing that says, if I speak up, like when you're a little kid and someone said, shut up to you, so you shut down and you wouldn't talk anymore. I mean, that's a very simple example. A lot of kids have experienced it. But when we grow up, we keep not talking because of one thing that happened way long time ago, or a series of things that happened a long time ago. So
you're so right, Sonia.
Yeah, I encourage people to really see through the mess that's out there, and because you know in your heart of hearts what's real and what's true, and live it in the smallest, tiniest ways. Don't live, I mean, you can live it in big ways too, because some people have the capacity to do that. But if you can live it in the smallest ways, it makes a difference. Because there's millions of us doing it now. I mean, they used to talk about the 144,000 light workers. No, there's millions of us now. Millions and millions of us. They're everywhere. And we're tipping the scales in our favor as long as we can stay true and allow ourselves to move through the fear of discovery, inner discovery. Just blow it in the balloon and let it go. Tie it off, let it go. You know? Yeah. I could talk more, but my time's up, I bet, huh?
Yeah, we're there, but wow. Thank you. Wow, what fantastic messages you have shared with all of us, and what a powerful note to close on. Absolutely, it's time. And
Yeah.
so I'll just quickly say thank you all, and I will give you the last word, Tonya. So I would just want to say thank you all to tuning in to Alchemy of Light. Thank you, BBS Radio, and Seth, and Don, and Doug, and the awesome crew back there. And so, Tonya, please take us away with a final word.
Final word. You know you're loving yourself when your choices lead to peace of mind and peace in your heart. That's when you know you're loving yourself.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey, do you want to say shout out to anybody or goodbye?
Shout out to all my peeps that said they would listen and help me get through this. Thank you all, Joel and Flani and Alan and everybody. Thank you so much. Oh, this was
Bless your beautiful heart, Dunya. Thank you for coming on the show.
You're welcome.
Alrighty. Well, have a great night.
You too.
Thanks.
Okay, bye.
Bye.